Blog Talk Radio.
And now, on the African American Athlete Sports Network, it's Express Yourself with host T. Ramone and Sko.
Express Yourself!
It's an hour packed with guests, opinions, sports news of the day, and off-the-field issues that impact play on it. And you, the listeners, will have an opportunity to express yourself on our call-in line as well. Now here's our Express Yourself hosts, veteran sports journalists Tim Turner and Roscoe Nance.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome again to another episode of Express Yourself with T. Ramone and Scope. I'm Tim Turner, along with co-host Roscoe Nance. We think we're going to have a really great show this time out, with today being, I guess, the second day of free agency for the NFL. A lot's going on in football, college basketball. The regular season's over. This is tournament time, so there's a lot happening right now. You know, the MEAC tournament is going on as we speak. We have the SWAC coming up. SIC is over. CIAA is over. Those two champions and other teams are waiting to see where they're going to be seated or if they're going to get a bid. And I have a confession for everybody right now.
Confession is good for the soul. Confession is good for the soul.
My parents did not buy my way into Morehouse College. They did not have a fat check to get me into school. I got there on my merits academically, so I just wanted to get that off my chest. That my parents did not, have anything. They had enough confidence in my academic abilities that they didn't have to cheat and write checks to get me into Morehouse. So I feel better getting that off my chest.
Tim, as you know, I went to school with your brother,
right?
And he told the rest of the story.
Oh, the rest of the story. I got you. I just want to let everybody know that there were no checks were written to get me into football, and
well,
to play football.
Puncho told me that your parents spent all their money getting you out of Columbus High. That's why they couldn't buy your way.
You know, and that could be a thing too. I don't think I wasn't at the top of my class, but I also was not holding up the bottom of it. But you know, that's an aside. We know that that scandal right there just blows my mind. Where I think SC cost $25,000 a year, maybe $30,000 a year for 4 years, and that comes out to be around, what, $120,000? And somebody paid somebody $500,000? So the math there is kind of sketchy.
Well, that shows you how dumb not only were the kids, but the parents.
That was a kind of a tight thing. But, you know, a lot of dollars will be thrown around there, but a lot of dollars are being thrown around right now in the NFL. Free agency started. There's a ton of movement. Guys are going to places, you know, you're just going, wow, wow, wow. You think people will be lifers. And then you see things with T. Sizzle. He's going out to Arizona. He played at Arizona State, but I would think he would have, you know, retired a Raven. You got that kind of stuff. And it's just a lot of movement. And we got our guest tonight. Who's going to be with us? Who's with us now? As a matter of fact, I want to get him on in a hot second here. Charles Davis, who's an analyst for Fox Sports. I met him another lifetime ago when he was doing things down at Disney. A really great guy. I know you know him. Roscoe is a really terrific guy, and we want to just get his take on all the activity that's going on. So, Roscoe, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Charles. Welcome aboard.
Thank you very much. Good evening, guys. Thanks for having me.
Let's get right into it. And what's your take on all the movement and, Odell Beckham Jr. being traded and Antonio Brown going to the Raiders and Le'Veon Bell is going to go to the Jets and Terrell Suggs leaving the Ravens and things like that? It's crazy.
Yeah, it's a crazy time out there, and let's be frank about it. Money starts with money, You know, Le'Veon Bell didn't like the money he was getting in Pittsburgh, ended up sitting out entire season before he cashed in this year with the Jets. Antonio Brown, it wasn't all about money with him, but you notice when the move was made, all right, he was upset about different things in Pittsburgh, including his quarterback Ben Roethlisberger. But when the move was made to Oakland, what did he ask for? A little sweetener.
More money.
More money.
more money.
And he got more money. Terrell Suggs, this wasn't as much about the money as it was about, I'm guessing, what they were telling him in Baltimore versus a chance to go to Arizona and still be a frontline guy. I'm guessing that in Baltimore they might have been telling him that his role might have been reduced a little bit. So he makes the move and goes back, as you guys noted, to where he played college ball at Arizona State and has a chance to be the bookend with Chandler Jones to rush the passer under new management there, with Vance Joseph being the new D coordinator and Cliff Kingsbury, the offensive guru, now the head coach. But Vance will run his own ship there because Cliff has never been a defensive coach. If you just look at the much been AWOL on. So that'll be Vance's to do, and his team will go on from there. But I think the thing that's thrown me the most about this free agency is, you know, the NFL Network calls it free agency frenzy. And they have been exactly right, because Trent Brown agreed to terms 9 minutes after the period opened with the Oakland Raiders from New England to Oakland. And I don't hear of anyone making trips to visit the city, visit the team, sit down with the coaches, decide if it's a great fit or not. Will I work at this place? What'd you say the contract was? Done. And off they go. So it's been a very interesting deal watching all this movement, because think about the Jets. They've been prolific in free agency with a brand-new head coach in Adam Gase, a young quarterback in Sam Darnold, and all these guys are flocking to New York. So they're spending a ton of money, a ton of cap space in order to try and get relevant and try and compete with New England in the AFC East at the very least.
Well, you see, the Baltimore took another hit when C.J. Mosley, he's a Jet now.
He's a Jet.
It's amazing. It's amazing what you're saying. Nobody took trips. So you think about tampering and these side deals and that kind of thing. And, I mean, it's not – you know, in baseball, they were jumping on Bryce Harper for even mentioning Mike Trout. But over here, you got guys openly saying, yeah, when things open up on Monday, Tuesday, or whenever it started – we're going to get you, you know, that kind of thing. And I guess football's real loosey-goosey about that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And they're so loosey-goosey about it, they use oxymoronic terms. Illegal tampering period, legal tampering period. What? What does that mean, you know? I mean, as you pointed out, if they're not having these conversations ahead of time, how does Trent Brown agree in 9 minutes?
Right.
You know, I mean, 9 minutes after the session opens, he's like, yep, I'm in. So, but no one is – it's one of those things. You know, I played college football in the SEC. And way back then, there used to be a discussion about, you know, what constituted cheating in recruiting. I remember an old coach telling me, "A young man, there's cheating and there's cheating." And just by the emphasis he put on it, I said, so what's the first one? He said, oh, cheating. He said, that's what we all do. You know, we all do this, we all do that. But when you've gone too far, that's cheating. And we got to draw the line there. So it's one of those things that's a nebulous term. It's just like, you know, Justice Potter Stewart. When I see it, and that became his legal definition for it, that's kind of what it was like back there in recruiting in the SEC. But now with the NFL, a lot of it is, as we said, the money. Some of it is the team that you're playing for and you may want to stay with may no longer want you at that money, at that dollar figure. So you may have to try and find that dollar figure elsewhere. I just saw a thing with J.R. Sweezy, the offensive guard with Seattle, who was just finishing his second term in Seattle, likes playing there, likes being a part of it. He didn't figure into their plans anymore. I think he just signed with Arizona. And one of his comments about leaving was, you know, this one really stings. So all these guys are moving, but not all of them are moving because they want to. They may be moving because they feel like they have to. And some of these have hurt the teams as well, because Eric Berry just got cut by Kansas City.
Right.
And with everything Eric Berry has been through, everything he's been through, beating cancer, being the All-Pro there, battling his way back, no one in Kansas City wanted to make that move. But football-wise, he's had a lot of injuries lately, hasn't played up to the same level they're used to. They signed the Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu, and they signed him at a dollar figure that's going to average at $14 million a year. Eric Berry was going to average at $13 million a year. In today's sal cap days, there's no one in the NFL paying two safeties that kind of money. And so, unfortunately, they had to make the hard decision. Eric Berry became the guy who was the odd man out. And that hurt everyone in Kansas City as well.
Shouldn't these teams really get excited about these about what's going on right now with this free agent frenzy? Should the Jets already start thinking about, yeah, bring it on New England or that kind of thing? Or should teams like my Falcons, who had like almost $7 million to spend and are sitting this thing out, and then signed some, you know, also ran offensive linemen, and should they be two folks to sit back and go, you know, you're going to stink again this year? You know, how do you gauge that? How should fans look at these type of transactions this early?
Well, I'll just stay with the two examples you gave just to start off with. With the Jets, before they go out and print playoff tickets, they have to know that they're going to mesh as a team. That's the thing, is they've got a second-year quarterback that they've got to see the type of improvement that we have seen from second year. That wasn't so great, but remember, that was under Jeff Fisher's tutelage. And that staff, they end up getting Sean McVay. Kid ends up being a second-year marvel. Third year, he's in the Pro Bowl and in the Super Bowl. So can you make that type of a jump under Adam Gase's staff? Can that happen for Sam Darnold? Because if he does not, then I don't care about C.J. Mosley signing, okay? I don't care about Le'Veon Bell playing. The quarterback has to play well in today's NFL. It's hard to work around that quarterback and win a lot of ball games. So that's where it's going to be for them. It's going to be that type of a jump. And then you mentioned the Atlanta Falcons. You know, they end up signing, you know, the offensive lineman. They needed to sign offensive linemen. They may very well draft some offensive linemen. But part of what Atlanta's counting on is, can you get Keanu Neal back fully healthy again? Do you get Deion Jones for the entire year fully healthy again? Because they lost two of their – I mean, listen, they lost three guys down the middle because they lost Ricardo Allen, right?
Yeah,
Ricardo Allen. So you lose both starting safeties and your middle linebacker. And football's just like baseball. Are you strong down the middle? Now, fortunately for them, they were able to keep Grady Jarrett healthy all year. But you lose your starting middle linebacker for most of the year, both safeties for just about the entire year, it's hard to go. Now, DeMonte Casey played well for them, and that's going to help them going forward. And it may force their hand on Ricardo Allen coming back, I believe, from an Achilles. That could be the tough part for him because Casey needs to be on the field. Young, aggressive, heck of a player. But they're counting on getting well through guys that they had lost through injury last year, in addition to trying to strengthen the team as well. So some moves still have to be made. Just because free agency is happening doesn't mean the moves won't be made in the draft. And I would expect Atlanta to still be players in the draft.
I just got to know when they took another hit right now. Tevin Coleman is a 49er. I'm sorry, Roscoe. Tevin Coleman just signed with the 49ers. So that means it's all on these other guys. But I'll leave the Falcons alone. And Roscoe, I'm sorry for jumping in there for that.
That's okay. Remember, Ito Smith came on for them last year and came on faster than they expected, and they knew Tevin Coleman was on his way. And the surprise to me, frankly, is that Tevin Coleman found his home in San Francisco because Jerick McKinnon's already there and Matt Breida's already there. So that was a little bit of a surprise. I thought he'd go to a place where he would be the feature guy for sure, but it just didn't work out that way. He'll still have an opportunity to play well in San Francisco, especially since he knows the head coach and the system pretty well.
Well, you mentioned C.J. Mosley earlier, and he had been projected to be that next guy in the line of defensive stalwarts, you know, in the mold of Ray Lewis, Eric Reed, Terrell Suggs, leader of that defense, and yet they let him walk. What do you think was going on there?
Well, I think, Roscoe, I think it was a price tag, frankly. I think they see him as a very good player, but I will guarantee you they don't see him as a Reed and Ray Lewis. Because, let's face it, those guys are few and far between. right? I mean, they're just not that many. Do they see him as a guy they'd love to have in the middle of their defense? Yeah. But as this game becomes more and more about throwing the darn football, I'm not saying C.J. Mosley can't be on the field for that. But from what I can tell and from what I'm hearing, they valued him at a certain price tag, and once it went beyond that, they weren't going to go any higher. And I think part of that is what they were worried about him in pass coverage. So that's just a calculated gamble you make. It doesn't always turn out. A lot of times it'll come back and bite you. But in this case, Baltimore is saying this is what we're going to go with. And they, you know, I think a lot of teams feel like they can find linebackers almost similar to how they can find running backs throughout the draft, later round guys who can come and be serviceable for you. But the way we're playing defense nowadays, on the critical passing downs, it's 5, 6, 7 defensive backs on the field, and linebackers will go off.
Well, this wasn't a free agent signing, but the trade, the Giants, Odell Beckham Jr. to the Browns, that has been the buzz. And people, you talk about printing playoff tickets, they're talking Super Bowl in Cleveland. Don't forget about the playoffs. You know, they've already won the playoffs.
Yeah, that was interesting, wasn't it? I mean, I was doing a show last night when that whole thing came down, and your point's well taken, Roscoe. There, we haven't seen this type of enthusiasm in Cleveland since probably Brian Sipe and the Cardiac Kids under Sam Ratigliano. Then we're talking about Marty Schottenheimer and the teams that went to the AFC Championship game with Bernie Kosar and Mac and Biner in the backfield. And, I mean, the dog pound defense of Frank Minifield and Hanford Dixon and that crew. I mean, we're talking about the, you know, the late 80s, early 90s, before since they've had that type of optimism. They did have the 1 year where they went 10-6 with Romeo Crennel as the head coach, and we thought, hey, better days were ahead. That turned out to be an aberration. They slid back down again. But right now, when you look at what Cleveland did, how they played last year with a rookie quarterback in Baker Mayfield, rookie runner in Nick Chubb, in this offseason now they've acquired Kareem Hunt. Now, we don't know how long he'll be out because there's a suspension coming. You guys know that from the NFL. How long that will be. But they felt like they were positioned to get a very good young runner. And they also felt like they were in a position to absorb him not being there. See, they didn't bring him in to be the lead guy right away because Chubb is already there. All right? Duke Johnson is already there. Those are the guys they can roll with now. Boy, think about when they get Hunt. Now they can really make some big-time moves. And whether it's, you know, 10 games or an entire season, they're prepared for it. So that works out well for them. But then you add in signing Sheldon Richardson, a defensive tackle, acquiring OBJ yesterday to go with Jarvis Landry, the tight end David Njoku, the rookie quarterback Baker Mayfield. I think you probably saw the story yesterday where the odds went from them going to the Super Bowl like 150-1. In the last couple of days, the odds have dropped to 17-1.
Yeah.
So everyone's really feeling Cleveland. Everybody's feeling Cleveland right now. And one other thing to keep in mind, this is one of the few times you look at their division, the AFC North, and call it unsettled and open. Because in most years, when Marvin Lewis had it going in Cincinnati, right, 6 straight playoff appearances, when you talk about Pittsburgh year in and year out being Pittsburgh, talk about Baltimore and their success, well, Baltimore – made the playoffs last year for the first time. I guess it was only, let me rephrase, the second time in 6 years. And that's unusual because normally Baltimore is perennially a playoff team. But all in all, with all the moves of people leaving Baltimore, with Pittsburgh and Le'Veon gone, Antonio gone, everybody mad at Big Ben, Cincinnati being just an absolute mess right now with a rookie head coach, yeah. You can look at that division and say to yourself, if we're good enough, we've got a chance to compete, which is something Cleveland hasn't said in a long, long time, but they have that opportunity now.
So what if Cleveland gets off to a slow start and you have the personalities of Landry and OBJ and Baker Mayfield together?
How combustible will that be? That's a great question. And frankly, I think they'll be okay for this reason. Mayfield personality of one where he is going to get along is the wrong word. He's going to command the respect of OBJ and Landry. And at the same time, he's also going to be one who can handle when they want, hey, when do I get the football? Okay, he'll handle that better than maybe other guys. He'll relate to these guys. The flip side is, don't forget, Landry and OBJ are like best friends. Now, we know that best friends can break up over some crazy things. Percy Sledge talked about it. If you put a man's woman down, you know, he'll quit his best friend. But I don't think we have that type of an issue with OBJ and Landry. I think that these guys get each other, crazy about each other, want to play. They'll demand the football come Sunday. But I think this has the makings of being an okay pairing, even if they do get off to a rocky start. I'm much more concerned about their rookie head coach, Freddie Kitchens, who's never been a head coach anywhere, never called plays until halfway through last year. And it almost feels like this team and this organization went to their rookie quarterback and said, you really like Freddie as your head coach? Well, you like Freddie? You want to be your head coach? He's like, yep. They're like, we're in. And wow. Off you go. Now Freddie could be the second coming. We don't know. But if you look at it on the surface, you're saying, hold up a second. Guy never even called plays in the NFL until halfway through last year. But when he did call those plays, he averaged almost 7 yards per play. They did a really nice job. Now he has to take over and be a true head coach, not just coach on one side of the ball, and have plenty of personalities that will test him that way as well. But you got to like where Cleveland is headed. But I'm much more concerned about their head coach than I am about any of the players right now.
Well, what are the Giants doing?
They're rebuilding, Roscoe. I mean, here's what happened. They went to the playoffs that first year under Ben McAdoo. Everything cratered the next year. He and the Giants themselves mishandled the Eli Manning benching, because if you're going to bench Eli, as much as I like Geno Smith, you don't bench Eli and play Geno Smith. You bench Eli and play the rookie quarterback you drafted to see what he has, Davis Webb. They didn't do that. They screwed it up royally. The fans spoke. They fired everybody. Everything was a mess. And part of that is on management, not just on Ben McAdoo. And so then when he got fired, they brought in Pat Shermer. Dave Gettleman is the new GM. The thought was they weren't as far off, Roscoe. Hey, they went to playoffs 2 years ago. All it takes is the right guy leading and get this guy going. They drafted Saquon Barkley, and it turned out they were wrong. And so, you know, they went that extra year with OBJ. They signed him to the big contract, and it took OBJ probably less than a month to start complaining again. And I think right then and there they knew that they weren't in it for the long haul with him. And at that point, they just had to start figuring out where they were going to go. And to me, now they're saying we are in a little bit of a rebuild. So they pick up the extra draft pick in the first round. They'll pick at 6 and 17. They picked up another third-round pick. People are saying, hey, use the third-round pick and some other capital. Maybe call Arizona and get Josh Rosen, the rookie from them last year. I think they'll have to do a deep dive on his personality and whether that fits their organization. But I also wouldn't doubt at all them potentially going to Ohio State and getting Dwayne Haskins with the number 6 pick and making him a backup to Eli initially and breaking him in slowly. Remember, he's a redshirt freshman, guys, coming out of school. He's also only had 1 year of starting experience in the NFL, in college football, even though I was pretty darn good now. Got through a million touchdown passes. But at the same time, that wouldn't be a bad way to break into New York. But they are in a definite rebuild situation with the Giants. This is not, hey, let's do a quick fix and go back to the playoffs. They've got to get stronger everywhere. The offensive line needs a total rebuild. They have no great playmakers on the defensive side of the ball now, especially with Landon Collins gone. They've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, no.
Do you think
Olivia Vernon is gone.
Vernon, yep, he's gone. But how happy is he? He went to Cleveland. So he teams up with Myles Garrett, and they got bookend pass rushers now. I think Olivier Vernon will be very happy there, and I think he'll be productive.
In Jacksonville, where you know that you think that maybe the Jags missed their window 2 years ago when they got robbed by the Patriots. That's my story, and I'll stick with it. But Nick Foles is in Jacksonville now, and you know Bortles was there, and he pretty much has to think I got to move on somewhere else, but. Is Foles going to be enough because they're pretty much saying our problem last year was our offense, yeah. and our offense was led by Bortles.
Well, he's a great start because the Bortles thing was done. It had run its course. They tried it again. You know, they made it to the AFC Championship game. And you remember one of the games in the playoffs that year, Bortles ran for more yards than he threw for. And the last time that had happened in the NFL, I think Bob Greasy did it with the Dolphins. And that was a Dolphins team that barely threw it 10 times a game, if you remember, because they had Mercury Morris, Jim Kick, and Larry Zonka.
Zonka.
So it was a whole different time frame. But the move to Foles is an excellent one. They'll get healthy again on the offensive line. They had a number of injuries there last year. They've got good players there. Wouldn't hurt to fortify it a little bit. But that's a good O-line. But to me, the big deal is, what are you getting out of Leonard Fournette? All right? You used him, the number four pick in the entire draft to get him. Ran for 1,000 yards as a rookie. Last year was a tough year. Hurt a lot. You know, had some issues with management, different things. Is he going to get on board, get in full health, be ready to go? Because if so, that'll make Nick Foles a much better quarterback. They still need to fortify around him, but that's the starting point. And the defense has to reclaim what they were 2 years ago. Because that defense was phenomenal 2 years ago. Remember, they called him Saxonville. They weren't the same last year. They were dinged up. And we heard Jalen Ramsey talking a lot of stuff all the way through. But everybody quit hearing him when the team all of a sudden looked up and they'd won 3-4 ball games. Okay, so you can talk stuff all you want, but you better be winning some ball games. Now, Jalen Ramsey's a talent. He's a heck of a player. But they need all the other guys around him as well. They need Calais Campbell back at full strength. I know Malik Jackson just left in free agency, but that team has the potential to bounce back quickly. And that's the reason that they were excited to go ahead and get Foles.
Yeah.
Well, now, what about the guys that haven't signed? I'm sorry. What about the guys that haven't signed, like Indominus and Sue out in L.A.? I mean, they still have some big names that are out there.
Yeah, there's still a few out there. Ronald Darby, the corner with the Eagles, and a few other guys. Some of them will have to sift through some things. You remember last year we were wondering if any of the safeties were ever going to get signed? Remember that
one?
This year to just be all across the board. Remember, Sue's a veteran who's been around. He didn't play his best ball with the Rams, I thought, until the playoffs. I thought a lot of time he was the upfield rusher, even when they were running the ball in his area. So people have to know what they're getting out of him at this stage. Would not shock me at all if he ended up in another one-year deal somewhere. I don't know if people want to invest long-term with him. We'll soon find out. Because he's just not playing – well, I rephrase that. In my humble estimation last year, he played his best ball in the playoffs, but during the season wasn't quite the factor that they expected to see paired up next to Aaron Donald.
Well, Kansas City is a team that's going to be looking a whole lot different defensively after Dee Ford and Justin Houston, and you mentioned Eric Berry earlier having left. What are they going to do there?
Well, they've got to make some moves because they also lost their corner, Steven Nelson, guy called Mighty Mouse. They lost another corner. So they've got a bunch of moves that are going to need to be made. Some of it will be in the draft because they're going to want edge rushers. You mentioned they lost their top two edge rushers, Houston and Dee Ford. Can they find that edge rusher they want in the first round, or will they have to find them later on? Because they're not picking until 29, I believe, you know, or 30 or somewhere in that neighborhood. So it's down there a ways. So can they find what they're looking for there? But the defense will be different with Steve Spagnuolo now running the D. You know, Chris Jones came into his own last year at defensive tackle, so he'll be back and ready to rock and roll. But they're going to need to find some players and fill in some guys. So they definitely have a different look. But as long as they have number 15, Patrick Mahomes, around, look, he kept them in all the games last year and won a bunch more than maybe they should have because that was the 31st-ranked defense in the league last year. So
yeah, that's what I was going to say.
This kid makes a lot of magic, but the thing they have to keep in mind is no one throws 50 touchdown passes year in and year out. We've had three do it in NFL history, and he's one of them.
Yeah.
And essentially, they have 20 games of film of him too, so it's not like he's not going to surprise people by what he does.
Yeah, that's true. That helps as well. You know, you've got some things you're going to try and take away. But I will say he is a heck of a talent. and they run a great offensive system in Kansas City, and they're very diversified and do a bunch of things. But I'm with you on that. We're going to find out more now, the entire season of tape on him, how people will try and attack him differently.
Well, the skin. Now, you see, they signed Adrian Peterson back, and, you know, they made a move at quarterback. So how are they going to shape up?
Well, they still need to get stronger in the offensive line. They had a bunch of injuries there last year that hurt them. I think I did a ball game against Atlanta where I believe they lost three offensive linemen in the same game. So you don't get that very often. That's pretty unusual, but it's one of those days that just showed where they were. They have to get stronger there. Case Keenum now coming to Washington. He'll be the starter as best we can tell right now. Wouldn't surprise me at all if in the draft they took a quarterback. I think they'd be excited if somehow Drew Locke from Missouri fell to them at 15. But I wouldn't be surprised if Locke went to Denver at 10. So it's going to be interesting to see if they think Daniel Jones is the next quarterback or Ryan Finley, and would they go that high for one of them? Because from where I sit, I wouldn't go that high for either one. But that's just me. So we'll have to see how the teams evaluate them and value them. Because I'm saying at this point, Haskins and Murray are both off the board, but they've both been taken. But Washington definitely has to take a look. Because Alex Smith, it'd be stunning if he plays at all next year with the horrific injury he had, the infection that set in, the whole deal. So I just don't see that part happening. It looks like HaHa Clinton Dix is looking to go elsewhere. I know Washington made an offer for him at safety. They traded for him midseason last year in Green Bay, but everything I'm hearing, he could very well end up in Chicago, which would be really interesting. Mm. The Packers traded him to Washington, and then the Packers just signed Adrian Amos from Chicago, and so essentially it'd be a swap for Amos for HaHa Clinton Dix if HaHa goes to Chicago. Except that Green Bay would pick up a fourth-round pick in addition, so I guess they would win that deal. But we'll just have to see how that part goes. But Washington's got its work cut out for it, but they had a ton of injuries last year. If they can stay injury-free, remember at one point last year, they were leading the NFC East. I mean, we were into November, right, and they were leading the NFC East. Now, the other part you're asking is, can Adrian Peterson continue to roll back the clock and run the football the way he did last year on a consistent basis? It's a lot to ask, even from the guy called Wolverine.
Now, you mentioned Kyler Murray being gone. Is one of his possible destinations Arizona? Should Rosen be really worried about that?
Rosen already is worried about it because the talk's out there. And, you know, we were there at the Combine, and there was that big report that, you know, while we were talking about Kyler Murray, that Josh Rosen had deleted all of his social media that had anything to do with the Arizona Cardinals. And then hours later, we got the report that Josh Rosen said his phone had been hacked and everything had been restored. You know, my read on it is that he probably had a little moment there where he wasn't real happy, and then he tried to show that he was doing okay with it. It's real. The conversation is real about Arizona taking Murray at number one. Let's just put it to you this way. This is one person's opinion. If you're going to hire a coach who had a losing record in college, okay, and no one else was hiring him in college football as a head coach, he was going to be an offensive coordinator, and you're going to be that unconventional and hire him because of the way you want to run offense, now you're going to get conservative in the draft and go, well, we have a guy and we'll make it work. No, I mean, you've already put all your chips in the middle of the table. Kyler Murray makes the most sense to try and run that offense. This is a real conversation about him going at one. Now, if somehow Arizona passes on him at one, then we'll find out who else has a taste for him and about how high they want to get. Because don't ever count out Oakland and quarterbacks, even though they have Derek Carr. They pick at four. The Giants pick at six. My gut tells me the Giants would like Dwayne Haskins better than Kyler Murray based on the general manager and the head coach. That's just what my gut tells me. But I was watching Kyler Murray's throwing session today, and prominent in the background, head coach Pat Shurmur of the Giants, offensive coordinator Mike Shula of the Giants. So don't think that that's totally out of the realm. The Dolphins are a big team at 13. Denver, a big one at 10, although I would think John Elway still likes those big, strong-arm guys that kind of fit his mold a little bit better because he just tried it last year at Case Keenum, and he wasn't real thrilled with that. Kyler Murray's smaller than Case Keenum. So I just don't know that that's his flavor. But, again, you can't count him out because Murray's so darn talented. But, you know, the Broncos at 10, the Dolphins at 13, and Washington at 15. I don't think he gets out of anywhere out of 15, you know? And could there be a team that decides to come up? Well, Kansas City went from, what, 27 to 10 or somewhere in that neighborhood to get Patrick Mahomes. The Rams a few years ago went from 15 to 1 and took Jared Goff. The Eagles made two big jumps to somewhere from like 16 up to 8, 8 to 2 to get Carson Wentz. Don't ever underestimate a team that wants a quarterback. All right, it's just like a man chasing a beautiful woman. There's nothing they won't do to put themselves in a position to win her hand. If teams really want a quarterback, they find a way to make those jumps.
Well, what about the quarterback from Buffalo that everybody's talking about? And maybe he's the plan B for a lot of these people that don't that missed out on the Murray sweepstakes.
Yeah, Tyree Jackson. I would think that he's going to be. I think the bidding for him would not surprise me if it starts in the third round.
Third.
If it goes up as high as the second round, now we're in a position where you're saying Tyree Jackson from Buffalo. You're probably saying Ryan Finley from North Carolina State. I think you're kind of into that territory. I'm not sure where Daniel Jones is going to land from Duke. Many people had him locked into the first round. I don't.
Yeah.
I like him a lot, but I don't have him locked into the first round. I think he might be a second-round guy. And he'd be the type of guy, you know, when the first round ends, that you're looking at the top of the second round and you see those moves made overnight where people trade to get in position to try and get a guy like that. So we'll see. But Tyree Jackson, I feel like, starts in the third round. I mean, here's the problem he has. I think he's had a very nice offseason. I think he did well at the Senior Bowl. He did a tremendous job at the combine showing his athleticism. But the league is also very big on predictive history and past history. We just don't have 6'7", 6'8", quarterbacks that have played well consistently for a long period of time in the NFL. And that's
so
the thing that's going to run
into. Damn you, Dan McGuire.
Yeah, well, Dan McGuire, Brock Osweiler.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just a difficult thing, and it seems very arbitrary, right? Because I think Phillip Rivers is about 6'6". You know, and all these things can change with one person. Remember, Kyler Murray 5 years ago, we wouldn't even taken a look at it. Now 5'10" and 1/8", he might be the first pick in the entire draft. Okay, so things change along the way. It's just harder to keep things compact when you're 6'7", 6'8". And Tyree Jackson, when he unwinds and throws it downfield, he throws it as well as anyone. What kills him, the swing passes and the check down passes. His touch and his accuracy actually goes down the shorter the distance that he throws the football. And in the NFL, you make a living on those swings and short check downs. So that's what he has to combat. But I'm telling you, someone's going to take a look. Someone's going to draft him. And he could very well, as you said, be that steal, and I'm rooting for him because he's a heck of a kid.
Now, you mentioned the kid at Duke. And why second round on him? Because it seems like Cutcliffe is getting that rep for being the quarterback whisperer, the guru. And, I'm thinking that would be enough to keep him up there because they're saying the kid's smart, and he has really a great talent.
Oh, he is. He's all of those things. And look, I played for Coach Cutcliffe at Tennessee. And there's no bigger admirer, and I don't love a guy more than David Cutcliffe. But the quarterback guru thing is real because you're talking about he tutored Peyton Manning, he tutored Eli Manning. Who's next? Okay? He's made other quarterbacks really good college quarterbacks. This kid has the potential to be a pro. I question arm strength a little bit. And being around him, I like the kid a lot. I don't know about his presence. I think that's something he's going to have to overcome a little bit. Because that league is a bunch of grown men staring at you in the huddle. I mean, this is you and your boys going down to the Rascaler on Saturday night. Okay?
It's a bunch of grown men trying to keep food on the table, keep a wife happy, and make sure the kids are clothed. That's a different deal about what they're staring at in the huddle, and they got to know that that guy is that guy. I know in college football you don't huddle as much. It's a different deal. The NFL, oh, yeah, they still got to look into your eyes and believe. You still got to command the locker room. You still have to do all those things. Now, I'm not saying he cannot. I'm just saying that I've talked with scouts, talked with people. The word presence comes up a lot with him. So can he still go in the first round? No doubt. You'll still see it with mock drafts, and it's legitimate. I think that he's much more of a second-round guy myself, and that's just my own personal opinion.
Well, you mentioned presence, and I'm thinking in Chicago, I haven't seen it yet from Trubisky. Yet they won last year with their defense. And, I mean, is he making any kind of progress in your eyes? Because everybody wants to blame the kicker since he got cut. And as a former kicker, I resent any kind of that kind of stuff.
Well, I don't know what happened with Parkey last year other than how you can hit an upright four times in one game is still beyond me. That you talk about buzzer's luck. And that wasn't the playoff game. That was during the season.
Right.
Then in the playoff game, he hits a double upright, and that's all she wrote. But he had a guaranteed contract, so they were going to ride with him as long as they could.
Right.
Trubisky, if you go back through the season, remember this, 13 starts in college. So you're back to that again where – these kids don't play nearly as much in college as maybe we used to get quarterbacks before. So he's still developing as time goes on. But you can plug in games where you go, okay, now you can see where he's getting it. You can plug in games where you go, oh, boy, he's got a lot of progress to make. He is a very serious-minded, tough, hard-nosed kid that team does respect because I had Chicago a couple times last year.
Mm.
And I do respect him as their quarterback and as their leader. But, yeah, he's got a long way to go, and a lot of that is very simply he didn't play that much in college. Remember, he sat behind Marquise Williams because Marquise was winning games, and that's one of the big misnomers for people out there is college coaches are trying to keep their college job. So if that guy is winning games for them, they don't care that the other kid may be more highly rated. They're going to keep rolling with that kid that's winning games. And Marquise won 10 games for him, Larry Fedora, and took him to an ACC championship game against Clemson. They came within a disputed onside kick of North Carolina having a chance to win. He wasn't benching that kid, even though Trubisky was more talented. And then when Marquise moved on, Trubisky got his 1 year starting and became the number two pick in the entire draft. So it's a whole different way. We have to evaluate quarterbacks a lot quicker than we did before. The Bill Parcells model of, you know, 20-something starts and this and that, it doesn't always apply because kids come out earlier because we're going to have the same thing this year with Dwayne Haskins. 1 year as a full-time starter at Ohio State.
Well, you speak of collegiate quarterback thing situations, and the you know, example 1A would be Clemson. What happened with them this year with their quarterback situation where Dabo's thinking about his job and what's best for the team, and the kid who was there has to move on.
Yep,
and
Kelly Bryant.
The national championship,
Moved him on in the middle of the year, which took a lot of guts in a lot of ways and hurt everyone. It hurt Kelly Bryant for being benched while the team was undefeated. It hurt Dabo, I think, to bench Kelly Bryant. But he thought that the team was going to reach its highest peak with this freshman quarterback. And guess what? He proved to be correct. So those are the types of decisions you get paid the big bucks for, and off you go. And Kelly Bryant, I believe, has moved down to Missouri and should be the starting quarterback there next year. And we'll see how it goes for him, and we'll root for him. But talent-wise, Dabo had it correct. This young, you know, long-haired kid who looks like Sunshine from Remember the Titans.
Yeah,
he can fling it around now, and he was truly the better quarterback, and it wasn't just a gut feeling. It was just this is where my team is going to play better. So, coaches have to make those kind of decisions, and he could have very well just said, you know, something, we're winning with Kelly Bryant, and he could have sat on that. And I don't think that Clemson would have lost. I think they would have gone on, but I don't know that they would have beaten Alabama with him versus beating him with the other kid. So. Those are the kinds of decisions that Dabo's in a position to make now. Do I make a decision for a national championship attempt, or do I make a decision to win another conference title? And he went for the big prize.
But, y'all, let's go back to free agency. Who are your biggest winners and losers?
Oh, boy. As we sit here now, I would say, obviously, you got to love what the Jets are doing, and we'll see how the alchemy comes together. But they have not been shy about adding some big-time pieces. I think what Baltimore did today was huge. They got – you know, you guys know Baltimore wants to run the football like crazy. Picking up Mark Ingram to be the lead runner now, that's a huge deal.
No.
And then to pick up Earl Thomas to be on the back end of your defense and to fall in line with those great safeties they've had. Ed Reed's going to the Hall of Fame, we know. After that, Eric Weddle came in and played, who's a terrific player, now went to the Rams. And now you go to Earl Thomas. I like what they've done there, even though they had some big losses. You know, they lost to Darius Smith, the outside pass rusher. They lost C.J. Mosley, the linebacker.
The Jets.
So you see, yeah, you know, so you see there's some give and take all the way across the board. I think that the Patriots standing pat, for the most part, is not going to hurt them. You know, Trey Flowers signed a big deal in Detroit as a pass rusher. He's never been a double-digit sack guy. I don't know that he becomes a double-digit sack guy just because he signed a big contract. You know, he is what he is, and he's a good player. And he's even better at playoff time. But sometimes when you sign for that big money, people expect more out of you than what you've given before. And if he gives them the same exact thing that he's been given New England, the people in Detroit think that there's a little bit of a failure there. Because he's now signed the biggest defensive end contract in NFL history. And I don't think he's the best defensive end in football. So this is, you know, more power to him for the contract. But you wait till midseason and people start running the sack numbers, and all of a sudden if Trey Flowers isn't one of the leading sack guys in the league, oh, it'll start to come up, and it'll come up in a big way.
Well, you mentioned there's another part of the New England connection there in Detroit where Danny Amendola is now a Lion. And you have him, and you have a Golden Tate, and you have Stafford, who really, for the money that he gets, hasn't made the Lions offense better, or the team, they haven't done a whole lot with that, irrespective. I mean, Jim Caldwell perhaps got a bum deal there. Who knows?
Yeah.
You see with that, you have Amendola on the opposite side of Tate. Their offense should be better. Their defense should be better. Should Detroit be thought of as somebody that's going to challenge the Bears or the Vikings or the Packers there in the Central there?
Well, one hopes so. They addressed offensive line last year with Frank Ragnow coming in, and he'll play next to Graham Glasgow. One of them be the center, one be the guard, as they did last year. They'll keep trying to get better there. But to me, their inability to run the football continues to be the biggest problem. And they sit there at number 8 in the draft. The best running back in the draft is a kid out of Alabama, in my opinion, Josh Jacobs.
Right.
And they have not had that consistent runner that you can just sit and count on game in and game out since Barry Sanders. And it's not like they haven't tried to address it. Kevin Smith out of UCF, who probably had too many carries in college and got chewed up pretty quickly in the NFL. They tried it with Javon Best at Cal, too many concussions. He was out of the league pretty quickly. They tried a stopgap measure with Reggie Bush, and you remember him doing a few things that were pretty good, but overall, that wasn't the pure answer. But if they don't get a consistency running the ball, remember they drafted Kerryon Johnson last year, who played pretty well for them out of Auburn. But a true lead back, to me, is what they need. And we'll see if they decide to go in that direction, although I think that getting Kerryon Johnson last year probably preclude them from taking Josh Jacobs at 8. I think that might be too high and too rich for them, considering Kerryon Johnson's already on the roster. But Garrett Blunt was there last year, but he's really become much more of a short yardage goal line type runner, more so than a featured lead guy. And, you know, Golden Tate, they traded last year in midseason to Philadelphia. So, you know, Amendola coming in now, this is going to be, what, third team in 3 seasons for him?
Right. The Dolphins
I don't think, listen, he's a slot guy. He's had nice success throughout his career. I don't underestimate it at all. He followed the same footsteps as Wes Welker, both of them out of Texas Tech, both undrafted, both really nice numbers in the NFL. But not a lead number one receiver.
Well, one more thing about the Browns, and I think today they picked up Frank Gore. So, I mean.
He went to Buffalo.
Buffalo, I'm sorry. I have him with the Browns today for some reason. Okay. The Bills, they loaded up today. You got Frank Gore in Buffalo, and you got Cole Beasley, who had his feelings hurt in Dallas and signed elsewhere. So, again, the Cowboys are looking for receivers down there. What are they doing in Texas?
You don't
get a real sense, you know, with Witten coming back. I guess that's going to solve everything, right?
No, that's not going to solve everything, but it'll help. You know, their play at the tight end position wasn't consistent last year, although Blake Jarwin had a big last game of the year. We caught 3 touchdowns against the Giants. But I think for Dallas, picking up Amari Cooper last year and giving up a 1, which I thought was too steep of a price, it turned out I was incorrect because he helped them get to the playoffs. He did a very nice job for them. And that's what Dak Prescott needed, and that's what they continue to need to work on is their chemistry and continue to get better and better there. Cole Beasley was very vocal about not getting the football last year. He wanted the ball more, thought he was open all the time. And after a while, you're going to be like, okay, well, we have Amari Cooper. We can find another slot guy. We love you, Cole, but, you know, if you really want to catch a lot more balls, you have to go somewhere else. And now he's going to go to Buffalo with a second-year quarterback in Josh Allen. So we'll see how all that goes for him. I hope it goes really well. But I can see where Dallas would make that move because now it's a game of where you're going to put your money. It's not just a matter of who the player is, and you're trying your best not to overpay for certain players, certain positions because – of loyalty because he's given you a few good catches and a few good games. But over the long haul, you got to figure what's his ceiling. Does he bring me more here? Does he bring me more there? And can I make better use of that money, maybe with a so-called lesser receiver or more unknown that we can go ahead and develop? So we'll see how that goes. Remember, they're hoping Allen Hurns can bounce back after the horrific broken leg in the playoffs too.
Oh, sure. Oh, we have one more. We have a caller on with us right now at 5666. Oh, you're on with us. It's area code 571.
Yeah.
Are you there?
And Robert Robinson.
Go ahead.
Robert Robinson calls from Palm Coast, Florida, and joined the conversation tonight. Wanted to back up to the Steelers. They've lost 2 star players, and I'm wondering just what's happening in Pittsburgh. Is it coaching? Is it the ownership? Is it just GM? What's really happening there in Steeler Town?
Well, look, for my money, what's happening is a reset in Pittsburgh right now. And the reset being Mike Tomlin probably allowed guys, because of their stature and the great play that they had, to have a little more rope than other players. And by the way, that's not unusual in that league, okay? I work with Jimmy Johnson at Fox Sports, and Jimmy has always said, I don't treat all the players equally. I treat them by who they are and how they play. And that's the equality of the whole thing. It's a great story about Jimmy when he's with the Cowboys where a third-string outside linebacker fell asleep in a meeting, and Jimmy cut him on the spot. And they announced the guy got cut, and he was at the press conference with the local media. And one of them said, well, Jimmy, what if Michael Irvin or Troy Aikman or Emma Smith fell asleep in the meeting? Would you cut him? And Jimmy said, no, I wouldn't cut him. I'd wake him up. Are you kidding me? And Jimmy looked at the guy like, what are you, insane? I mean, you're kidding me, right? I'm going to cut Michael Irvin? No. You just wake him up and say, let's go, man. That's the thing that's kind of getting lost in all this. Everybody acts like Mike Tomlin's like lost total control. That's not true. Sometimes it just doesn't work out. Le'Veon Bell was much more of a money dispute than it was a Mike Tomlin dispute. Now, Antonio Brown became a Mike Tomlin thing down the stretch, and that hurt him. I think Mike's going to retool, tighten down a little bit more, but he'll have less superstars to worry about. So that would be an easier deal. And by the way, James Conner had a heck of a year last year. Now, Le'Veon Bell is a singular talent. But Conner went to the Pro Bowl, had a great year for them last season. They feel like they can continue to roll that way. Juju Smith-Schuster turns into their number one receiver. And if you look at their history of drafting, They find receivers. They develop receivers. I'm not saying it's automatic. I'm not saying it's instant. But they do find guys who can play. Don't be surprised to see that continue for Pittsburgh. I think a quieter locker room, less turmoil for the guys now to address. And you can very well have a situation where Pittsburgh could be pretty darn good next year. Similar to remember Seattle, they get rid of Richard Sherman. Cliff Avril has to retire because of his neck. They get rid of Michael Bennett, right? Cam Chancellor had to retire because of his neck. But that locker room got quieter. The media sessions were easier. The young kids just responded and played. Everybody thought Seattle was doomed. They went to the playoffs last year. Wouldn't surprise me if Pittsburgh has a similar situation because they can't go through what they went through before. Remember, the issue isn't as much Le'Veon and AB and all the stuff that's going on between them and management. It's the problem is people like me, media people every day, talking to the entire team every time you're in the locker room. Hey, guys, what about Le'Veon? Is he coming in? Hey, guys, what about Le'Veon? Do you expect him in? Hey, guys, what about Le'Veon? Do you miss him? Hey, guys, what about Antonio? He seems upset over his contract. How's that filtering in? Those guys get sick of dealing with that. It's just human nature. So we'll see how it works out for Pittsburgh. So to go back to what I said, I think it's a massive reset is what we're looking for.
Right. Okay, Charles, we certainly appreciate you taking the time to give us some insight into the NFL and what's going on with free agency and trades and the upcoming draft and the season and who's going to do what to who. You're the greatest, and thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. You take care of yourself. Continued success. I know we'll talk down the road. Be good.
That was outstanding. A lot of insight there from Charles on the NFL and in college football. And, man, this is the NFL is really never out of the headlines, is it?
Oh, no, no. I mean, that's part of their marketing. It's year-round. It's year-round. You know, you go from the season to the playoffs to the Super Bowl to the combine to free agency to the draft to OTAs to training camp to the season.
Yeah, they keep themselves out there, and then you have some sides. You know, we want to go into side trips we make down in Florida and that kind of stuff. But we digress. The conference tournaments are underway. The MEAC started Monday. We just got a final for the game tonight, where Norfolk State has knocked off South Carolina State 78-73. And so we're looking for the MEAC. Norfolk, I think, is generally considered one of the top teams in the conference, and
they were the number one seed.
Yeah,
they were the number one seed.
They're perennially one of the better teams in the MEAC, and like you said, they're the number one seed. You see, Waddell State has upset Savannah State, and this was Savannah State's last year in the MEAC in the tournament. So,
nice.
They're out,
yes.
And yeah, absolutely. And so you know you got them, so that'll be going on through the week. I think the championship's on Saturday night. The SWAC championship is in Birmingham. I think it's in Birmingham, is it? And it's Saturday night as well, Saturday evening. With the women's games generally start before the men's game. So those things are going on as we speak. You got the CIAA champ. I think Coppin won that. Am I right on that?
No.
Virginia State, I'm sorry.
Virginia State won that.
Virginia State, they won the championship. They're waiting for a bid. And I'm thinking Miles won the SIAC.
Yeah, Miles won the SIAC.
And but I think Morehouse is ranked higher. So both of those schools will be sitting around waiting to see what's going on with their chances of going into the tournament in Division II. Real quick, a hats off to the trying to rush things up here. We've got a minute to go. Rasheed Wallace is now a high school coach in North Carolina. That's going to be interesting where she is going to be working out there, and that's going to be exciting. He's going to be at Jordan High School in Durham, and I think that's all we got time for. So we want to thank Charles Davis for his insight and for his just outstanding work for Fox Sports. He's one of the best in the business. And we will look for you guys next time and give you an opportunity to do what, Roscoe?
We always want you to express yourself.
You don't never need help.
whatever you do.